Hello and welcome to the first Knightshaven podcast of the new era, so to speak. The revival of the show. We originally did one of these for the pilot episode back in, we either recorded it in 2006 or 2007. But this is the first one of the new go. Been wanting to do them for a while. Been trying to sort of pick which episode to do it for. And then today we released episode 8. And I couldn't think of a more perfect episode to discuss. So this is going to be a bit of an audio commentary, I suppose, on episode 8, The Loss, where I'll just go through some of my thoughts and let you know what I was thinking when I was writing it, or editing it, because I wrote this script probably around 5 years ago now, originally. So this is the rewrite, obviously. There's some new stuff in there, but the actual writing process, I don't remember too well, but I do have some memories, which I will go into. This is on my own. There's no one else to introduce. Hopefully in future we'll get someone in to chat with. Right, so I'm sitting here now with the new episode on my flashy new iPad. That's my cheap plug for Apple. So you open your script up and you get your nice MZP logo. I do like that new logo. It makes the scripts look very, very flashy just from the get-go. It makes me mad when people don't put them on the script. And then we have the Knightshaven title page. Now, people might have noticed that the title pages are black for Knightshaven as opposed to traditional white. There wasn't any real reason for this. It was just I wanted something to make the script stand out a little bit, so you'd know you were reading a Knightshaven script. And funny enough, I was chatting to a member of MZP today about that very thing. I like it. I think it's a nice visual stamp. It's something I've used on my other projects. I've used different colours, but I've always gone for a different colour to the normal pages. So that is our main title page, short and simple. The original, when the show originally launched, the title pages we had our own designed logo and not just a font. There was loads of information on it, but such as air dates and all that malarkey and copyrights. And I found it really, looking back, it really dated the scripts. So now the scripts are designed that they could be picked up in a couple of years and you'd think it was brand new and there's nothing dating the year or whatnot on it. So yeah, that's the title page. I can't believe I actually managed to talk about the title page for a minute. That's shocking. I'm going to be all night at this rate. Okay, so we go into Act 1. And we see that Haven's in orbit of an alien planet. This opening was originally a lot different. I cut it down. And it hurt to cut it down because when I originally wrote the opening to this episode all those years ago, I was inspired a lot by Firefly's final episode. And with River walking around barefoot and whatnot, really sort of one with the ship. And so you see a little bit of that now in this opening sequence, but originally there was a much more. We opened just in space, in the cosmos, and there were stars and all that stuff. And then we flew through the stars, rushing almost at warp speed through them, and going past planets, through asteroids, and then suddenly we stopped at Haven. And then that's now where the episode begins. So we missed that first bit, which if it were a real TV show, probably would have been far too expensive to do on a mid-season episode. But it was quite beautiful. My reason for dropping it was that it was a bit flashy, I suppose. It didn't need to be there. I'm all about trying to make a lot of our episodes run long in the original releases. So I've been trimming them down, and this one, which originally ran at a nice length, I think it was around 54 pages. I've sort of got a bit ruthless now with what I'm taking out, so I just want to get straight into the meat. As much as I like the visual of that opening, it's more of a visual to see on TV. I don't really think it added anything from a reading point of view. So that's why I did that. So we open on Narina. I think that straight away we're seeing that this is going to be a Narina episode. I think some comments that people have made so far is that we're not seeing too much about Narina. She's there in the background. We're getting little hints about her, but what is she all about? And I think by the fact that we see her at the beginning, that the first interior scene is in her cabin, I think that's a mission statement saying this one's going to feature her quite prominently, as is the case as we read on. But so we can see something's up with Narina. She's a bit emotionally torn, maybe is the way to describe it. In the previous episode, we saw she was trying to have a conversation with Sebastian, and she was a bit torn then as well, and she just wanted to chat to him, but there wasn't the opportunity because of stuff going on with the villain of that episode, and she never had the chance to speak to him. So you can see that in this episode, it's playing on her mind now. But what's playing on her mind? And we're going to find out in around 30 pages time. But as we move on, Sebastian is involved in the deal. Now, we haven't really seen, throughout the course of the whole show, we haven't really seen Sebastian doing a deal with anyone. You know, they're on a cargo ship, they're meant to be working. But we haven't really seen any of that. So the point here was, as well as showing Narina, there's an episode about her, it was also to show this sort of side of Haven's life, which we don't see, which we probably should see, which is that he is a cargo trader. And so we jump in on this job, and it's not going well, as nothing does in Knights Haven land. And we're introduced to a Kikaran, or Kikaran, however you want to pronounce it. And this one in particular is called Druthen. Don't think I stole the name from anything. I think it's original. It's probably appeared in some alien sci-fi thing before. But now these aliens are like, they're new. They were created for Knights Haven. They're a 4 foot tall velociraptor like creature, which has dozens of sharp teeth and blood red scales. And they also wear rags. So you wouldn't see these on normal Star Trek, really. They're a CGI creation. That's something I tried to do with Knights Haven all throughout, is when we have aliens on it, we try to make them a lot more alien, so that they don't just seem like humans with something on their forehead. And so he's having some trouble. Druthen's refusing to pay the price, and even though he's agreed to it, Sebastian's worried now because he's got a contract with someone else to pass the goods on to Druthen. So eventually he gets angry. Druthen refuses to pay, and so he tells Druthen to get off his ship. Obviously, Druthen goes along with this, but as he leaves, he throws something into the corner of the room. What could it be? It's a bit more of a scene with Druthen, with Alan, and it turns out Alan knows Druthen. Druthen used to do deals with Sebastian's father, Lenny, so you can imagine that Druthen's probably been on board Haven quite a few times. Might be why he knows where to drop his little objects, because he's familiar with the ship's design. But Alan seems to get on with him to a certain degree. Manages to make a dig at Sebastian, saying that his father was simply a better man. It wouldn't be a nice Haven script without Alan making some digs at Sebastian with it. So eventually, Druthen leaves. And there's a little sly look with his men, and then he taps a round device. Ooh, what's going to happen? Doesn't look good, it's flashing. So we go on. Sebastian's obviously quite angry, but now we're back to Narina, and these are the scenes really inspired by that Firefly episode where she's just walking around the ship, one with the ship almost. I would have been a diehard Firefly fan at the time. I was writing this probably, actually. Rewatching it, so I'll explain a lot. So we get to go into the ladder chutes, and we follow her down into the corridor. Originally, the slug lines for Knights Haven used to feature the deck number. So it would be like where she would be now. She'd be going from deck 2 corridor into the ladder chute to the deck 3 corridor. Eventually realised that where we were hosted before, virtualstartrek.com, that kind of thing, it was a nice touch for people there who cared about layouts and designs of ships. But I realised that when we relaunched the show, that no one's really particularly interested in that stuff. So they've just become corridors. She's walking through, and she passes Reem, who told in 2 apples, so he's obviously eating, as usual. He barely acknowledges her, and we push in on her when she realises that something's wrong, and she can hear a muffled beeping. She lowers herself to her knees, and we get a nice little transition as we move down through the floor into underneath the deck, and we can see that there's a bomb. Just as she realises what it is, so the beeping gets faster, the floor below her explodes, as my capital letters tell us. Knights Haven scripts didn't even used to feature a lot of capitals in the action. It's something I've done on the re-releases, inspired somewhat by AJ Black's Star Trek Premonition. Might get a little bit annoying for some people, but I like the emphasis it puts on certain words, and it just makes the page stand out. And that's what it's all about, from the black cover page to all sorts. You know, I like it to come off the page. These things are never going to be made as a TV show, you know, so it gives us some flexibility to play around with it and think of it as a visual presentation. That's one reason these transitions and the slug lines are bolded, for example. It just looks nicer, easier to read. For me, presentation is quite key. I will put down a script if it's not presented very attractively for me to read and easy for me to read, then a lot of the time I won't bother. Yeah, I think appearance is key. So yeah, so what we've got into a big action sequence at the start, which is huge for us, because normally we get accused of having slow openings. The first act or two, normally a little slow to get going, but here we go. We've had a bomb go off on page 7, page 5, if you take out the title pages. On the bridge, Sebastian wants to know what the hell that was. The kicker and his ship is moving away from Haven. So here we go. It's all about to kick off. They don't know what's going on, but all they know is that Druthen's power and his weapons. We get some silence then in the cargo bay, which Narina's dropped down into. We can see the flames and see debris falling, but we can't hear it. She sees at that moment, as she's recovering from the explosion, because somehow she has survived it in typical TV show fashion, she sees another bomb. And just as we see it's there, it blows up and she gets sucked down into space. There was a beautiful image actually done by when we used to have a CGI artist. He used to do a lot of character animations for us and episode pictures, and there was one picture he did of Narina in space with cargo behind her, and my favourite picture he ever did. But I think it's around somewhere. It's one of the things that got lost with the my PC crash and Night's Haven stopping for a couple of years. And just she's out in space. Robin realises they've got hull breaches, and Sebastian now realises that it's all been part of a plan to damage Haven so the cargo will get blown out of the ship. And Druthen can get his cargo and get away and not have to pay a penny. And there's a little moment where Sebastian's starts floating up out of his seat, and for anyone who knows any tech stuff, which I've tried to take out with the scripts now, that means the artificial gravity is down. Now, I do try to minimise all the technical jargon in the scripts now, but back then there was a lot more of it because, you know, we were on a Star Trek site, so you could get away with it. I don't understand a lot of the tech jargon, so I try to keep it out of my scripts. But our other episodes, particularly by like Adam Murray Briggs, were full of it, and so it's something we've toned down, but I kept the artificial gravity mention here. Where we do choose to use them, I try to educate people in them, so we explain what it is, and then when we've explained what it is once, after that, then we'll refer to it by name, or just track name or something. But there's always that, when something's introduced, we will explain what it is from the get-go. But yes, he's floating over his chair, and suddenly, if this was a real show, my network are worrying that I've just spent my entire episode budget on the first half a dozen pages of the episode, half a dozen minutes. So we've had explosions and people floating around in the ship. And so we get into space. The kick around the ship flies over Haven. It's firing, just to add insult to injury. Haven's getting a beating. But Narina in space is actually still alive somehow. And this is because she's alien. And she doesn't die immediately. She's able to hold her breath, I'll say. It's creative license, guys. It's a nice visual. Don't judge it too much. It's not something to get hung up on. It's just a cool little scene, and I'll always put cool scenes above scientific logic. Okay, so we move on. The Kickerans, they beam the cargo onto the ship, and not realising, they also beam Narina onto the ship. And so later on then, Haven's been beaten, battered, bruised. Sebastian and Alan have been inspecting the damage, and they've just returned to the corridor, where they're meeting Reem, Robin and Amelia, who's appearing for the first time, who would all look a bit worried and concerned. Bit of a rundown of what's happened. I didn't want to get into too much detail about what damage was done, because again, no one really who reads the show now cares about that jargon. I've got people reading the show who aren't even huge fans of Trek, so I don't want to throw science lingo at them. I think that is what turned people off of Star Trek, in many ways. So I tried to stop all that. So we've got a quick rundown on artificial gravity. We've seen that earlier in the episode, so we can mention that. Life support, people generally know what that is. You know, it's your air supplies and all that. So so I mentioned that in there. So the bit I mentioned that they don't have supplies to repair some of the damage, which is a recurring thing for Night's Haven, and what we're going to get from that is the next part of the story. But it's also occurred to them all that Narina hasn't shown up, and Reem saw her on Deck 3 moments before the first explosion, so they know for a fact that she was near where a bomb went off. So as far as Sebastian's concerned, she's probably dead. So we're going on to the Kikaran ship. We're going to the cargo storage, and we see that there's 8 Kikaran rummaging through all the containers, inspecting their contents, making sure they've got everything that they should have. Druthen, feeling like he's got a big victory under his cap, he is walking through, surveying it all, and then suddenly something catches his eye, a foot. I tried to make this scene. I mean, Druthen hisses, and I never really wanted people to forget that these guys are these like velociraptor-like creatures, because I think it's quite easy in a script like this to suddenly forget that someone's an alien or all that stuff. So this was a concerted effort by myself to include those little things to remind us. No, they're not human. Oh yeah, they look like dinosaurs, aren't they? Yeah. So that was kind of the point. But he obviously finds Narina, and then there's like his men are looking at her in awe. And then Druthen starts laughing, and that's how we finish the first act. And I wanted to sort of leave on this feeling of something a bit seedy about this, which I think is always an area that it gets a reaction from people, and that kind of thing. And maybe a sort of an innocent female, potentially a victim. It's a delicate area to go into, but I think it certainly gets a reaction, and it can lead to some good little dramatic moments. So we've teased that at the end of the first act. So as far as first act goes, I don't think Night's Haven has had a more action-packed first 10-11 pages throughout the season to date. And I think overall the point was there. We've got to the story now. Narina's been captured, though unintentionally. And obviously, Sebastian and the crew think she's dead, and now we're going to... Obviously, they're going to find out she must not be, and they're going to try and save her. So that's what we assume the story is going to be. Even though the Kikarans were a key part of the first act, but by the end of the episode, they're not the villains, the main villains at all, which is not something we do often on Night's Haven. It's very straightforward a lot of the time. The people who show up at the start are our bad guys throughout. So I like to think this episode breaks the format a little bit. So we open Act 2. We're in a laboratory. I didn't want to put like medical room or sick bay, because we've got that on Haven. I wanted a lab, a laboratory. You know, it's a seedy ship, isn't it? Narina's hanging from the ceiling, chains wrapped around her wrists. You know, she's hanging from her wrists in a laboratory. I just thought the visual that creates is a bit icky. She's completely naked. She spends a lot of this episode naked, and not at all in a good way. It's even when I was writing it, and when I was certainly editing it and rewriting it for this new release, there was something a little bit blech about her being naked all the time. She always seemed very exposed. Now, Narina's a character that I think the audience have latched on to, but we don't know much about her. But I do know a lot about her, and she's quite close to my heart as a character, like all my characters are. So seeing her in this exposed manner is a bit horrible, but it's what we have to do as writers. I made a point here in the description where Druthen... It says, Druthen is stood directly in front of her, giving him a fantastic view of her body. Now, I did want that there, because realistically, Druthen doesn't care much about Narina. Now, she has no significance to him at all. So I very much wanted to make the point that he had a fantastic view of her body, because he is perving on her. He's trying to eye up her costs. You know, how much can he sell her for? Because she's a magnificently beautiful young lady. There's loads of that throughout the script. It wasn't to be a pervy writer, it was to make a point, give you a perspective of these aliens, because they seem to be a bit sexually active, and as we'll see later on, you know, some of them do try to do some of that dirty stuff with Narina, but we'll get to that later. So we've got another Kikaran, his name's Rucklin. He only appears in this scene, so quite, I'm not, even now after rewriting it, I'm not sure why I named him. He could have just been Doc Kicker and Doctor or something like that. But I named it nonetheless. So Rucklin is the star of the scene. We learn in this that she's merely a teenager. It's not something that we've mentioned in the show to date. I think because she had sex with Sebastian in the first episode, there's always this assumption that maybe she's around 22, 23, like a young woman. But we find out here that she's not. But there is a point to say that she's merely a teenager in her years. So to us, she could be older in our years. But as far as the puberty cycle and such for an Orion lady, she's not yet reached the end of that. So she's still a teenager. She's not yet an actual adult woman. And this does come back later on, I think, for Sebastian particularly, because obviously he slept with her. Druthen's worried that because she's a teenager that lowers her value. And there's a mention here that Rucklin says, you know, despite her age, she has had multiple sexual experiences, and he's found internal damage, who suggests that she's been forced to mate against her wishes on several occasions. And the message there is that she's obviously been raped in the past, or at least violated in some manner. I wouldn't suggest that that's the only sexual encounter she's had, though. I mean, she slept with Sebastian, he wasn't taking advantage of her at all, so she's obviously used her sexuality for her own gains at times as well. But we're starting to get more and more hints now about maybe what her lifestyle was like before the show started or before we met her. And all Druthen cares about is her large price. So this is a pretty horrific scene to witness. You know, Narina's in a very exposed state, as she is for the rest of the episode, really. And Nightshaven hadn't really done that yet. Our show's very heavy on male leads. We've shown the male leads in precarious situations, but we haven't really done it with the women, apart from Robin, when she lost her sight in episode 2, The Storm. So I think there's really, the show at this point really starts to delve into the female characters a bit more, shows us their past, their mindsets and all that. We go back to Haven, where Robin is still convinced that Narina could be alive, but Sebastian, he's not been able to find her on the sensors or scanners. He's just assuming that she's dead. So he doesn't seem too distraught. He's not showing much emotions, but he is starting to show a bit of regret for everything that's going wrong on the ship. We mention his arm again. We don't want to force it in that he's lost his arm in episode 7. It's been replaced by a mechanical one, but it does make a mention to it here. And we do try to just drop it in as a reference from time to time. So proximity alarm goes off. So we know that someone's nearby. Is it Druthen? No, it's not. It's someone else. And then we find out in our description of them, we find out that it's vessels we've seen before or seen something like it. Now, what could it be? And I thought, someone beat around the bush. Sebastian's first line, Orion Syndicate. So it's someone we haven't seen since the first episode, where they were our villains in the first ever Nightshaven. They got name dropped a couple of times since, but we haven't seen them since episode 1. So here we are on episode 8, and we're seeing the bad guys again. And Sebastian says, this day officially sucks. I quite like Sebastian's dialogue. As I think it's been mentioned in reviews and stuff that he's quite his dialogue's quite snappy and stands out, I think, amongst Trek leads. And I'm hoping by the end of the run that he is remembered as a strong lead character for a VS, because I love writing him. I think he's flawed. He's not perfect in any way. He's fun, though. And, you know, he can be a bit of a douchebag. So I hope that he does go down in history as one of the strong VS leads, much like Freya and such from Parcel View, who I think is an outstanding character. And I'm hoping that maybe Sebastian can be seen up there with her one day. So we go into the Orion Syndicate vessel now. We don't often see these stories from the other side, as in we don't often see it from the perspective of the bad guys. There's almost always a Nightshaven, a regular character in this scene. In this, we're going onto the Orion Syndicate vessel's bridge, and Brox is there. Now, Brox is someone we met in episode 1. Probably not someone that people thought was key, but there was, in our original run, there were a set of webisodes, I suppose is what they get called now, but we called them prequels. It was part of a companion series called Beyond Nightshaven, and one of these did focus on Brox from before the Nightshaven show actually started, probably around 6 months before the show. So I'll go into that later, because it does feature events in that which get described later on in the episode. So for me as a writer, I know a lot more about Brox than the reader does. He was just the, in a sense, generic villain from the first episode, because we didn't focus too much on the bad guy threat in episode one. It was more about Sebastian and getting him where he needed to be and getting his crew together and such. So got someone called Veraldish. I'm not even sure. Sounds familiar to me. Maybe I read the script around four times in the last week, though, so could be that. I don't think I took it from anywhere. I do sometimes take these names from other shows as a nod. I don't think that was one, though. Please tell me if it was. So I go back to Hay and Alan's suit, and up into a space suit again. Originally, they were called, like, EV suits in the original scripts, and when I was editing it, I do make a strong point to try and keep these open to non-Trekkies, so we change little things like that to spacesuits. More common language, which maybe seems a bit out of place in a Star Trek show, but it's just so people know. People don't know what an EV suit is. So I say spacesuit, job done. It doesn't make a difference to me what I call them in the script, really, as long as the reader knows what they are. So we do, I don't want to use the word dumb ourselves down with that stuff, but we do try to make it a bit more accessible without having to explain what everything is. So Robin's had to run down to get her dad to come up to the bridge because the internal comm is broken. So that's a nice little touch again. You wouldn't see that on a Trek show where someone has to run down, climb down a few ladders and run to get someone because the comm's not working. So I like that about Haven and Night's Haven as a show, is that we do see these little sides of ship life which we never saw on TV or in the movies. She calls Alan and says the syndicate there, and they're all going to go onto the bridge. So the pace hasn't dropped really for the whole episode, which is the point. It's a very key episode by the time you get to the end of it, which hopefully you've done before you've listened to this podcast, otherwise huge spoilers abound. But very key episode. I didn't want it to be tame. We were following episode 7, which was a huge episode in the mythology of the show, and we'll be moving forward, and this was a big one now, dealing with our original story arc. So yeah, we couldn't have a nice slow build. This one had to just keep it up, and so as soon as the kicker ends, blew half of Haven to pieces, stole the cargo, stole an arena. Suddenly the Orions are there, and you're thinking, God, like Seb says, this day officially sucks. It's just not letting up. So Alan's on the bridge. They're getting ready for a battle, and Sebastian realizes there's no way they're going to win. If the Orions open fire, really, they're screwed. And part of him probably suspects that they're there because they want the chip, although in the first episode we realise that the Orions don't know that the information they're after is on a chip, but they know that Lenny Knight did have information that was worthwhile to them. Sebastian sends Reem with his little plasma bow, or disruptor bow, change description from episode to episode, but sends him outside Amelia's cabin because he doesn't want to take any chances, because that's where they went for last time, and he doesn't want to risk his mum being in danger. Reem grabs his weapon and waits outside the quarters. But then the Orions hail them. And it's not quite the conversation that we were expecting. Sebastian says that he'd hoped Brox had died on Oregon 4, which was where the big battle took place in the first episode. We never really saw what happened to Brox, so, but obviously we get insight here that Sebastian had wondered what had happened to him and had concluded that he's probably dead, but no such luck. And Brox claims that he's here to help Haven. So we're back on the kick-around ship, and we're in a cell now, and Narina's in the cell, and she's naked, very much been exposed. And it's not just been naked, it's naked around these vile little lizard velociraptor creature things. Just the visual, at least what it creates for me, is dark and dingy. You know, it's not comfortable. I hope it came across like that to read as well, and I hope people did feel a little bit uneasy reading it. She's taking this around and she realises she's in a cell, but there's force fields around her now. I think I might have explained a force field in the previous episode, but either way, people understand what they are. So there's people watching her, and we see that the open jaws, and one of them's got drool dripping from his teeth, and you're thinking, oh, what the hell is going to happen to her now? And that was the point. We were building, again, it's all building towards possibly a big moment for Narina later in the episode. And we're starting to worry about her fate, so to speak. So we go to Haven's hull. We haven't seen this kind of shot. I always think of Star Trek 8, First Contact, where Picard, Worf, and is it Hawk? I can't remember his name. We're walking across the hull. We're getting to see Haven's hull up close, which we haven't done until now. And we get to see it's really a patchwork of repairs. The ship is over 50 years old. The colours don't even match, and all the all of the hull plate in, and Sebastian then is a bit peed off that the Orions are putting silver down, because of all the colours on the ship, silver's probably one of the ones that isn't there, but like he says, couldn't we have stuck with the old colour scheme? So there's a little bit of a joke there. I like to, as dark an episode as it is, I don't think it would work if there wasn't at least some humour. He goes back into the ship through the hole and through the next hole, and again, very expensive. This episode would have been so costly if it was an actual television episode. But you know what, I make a point in my scripts to remind readers and myself that these aren't ever going to get produced. You know, the budget for an episode can be the budget of a movie if you so choose, or it could be the cost of an independent film. You know, it depends what we're trying to achieve in any given episode. Obviously, yeah, the fact that Orions are ignoring him, the point was to get to you guys that they're not all there to help him, as much as Brock claims that something's not right. We get a little scene in the mess hall, and there's a point that the Orion men are all in there, but they're not eating, they're just chatting, and Sebastian apologises for not feeding them, but you know, he's barely got enough food for his crew. He's eating a tomato pasta meal, inspired by the fact that when I wrote this, my now wife, who's a girlfriend at the time, which I'm sure to cook for me, was basically a pasta with just a tomato sauce mix that you can buy off the shelf. So that's what Sebastian's eating here. Normally he's eating potatoes, but I thought I'd give him something which kind of became my version of of lightsaber potatoes, the kind of thing that you don't want to eat again and again and again, but you do. Sorry, wife. Sebastian wants to find out why Brox is there, and Brox reveals that it's because Druthen is a wanted criminal. Now, we find out later on in the episode that this is actually a bullshit reason. This isn't why Brox is there at all, but it's a reason that Sebastian can buy, and he does buy it. He does fall for it, and they make a deal. So because Sebastian, he's got a big ego, and we always try to sort of remind people of that. And he doesn't like that. Well, you don't. As far as I'm concerned, his reasons for wanting to go after Druthen are a bit unclear. Is he doing it because, as he claims, you know, he's lost a crewman, or is he doing it because Druthen got one up on him and stole the cargo, which he's refusing to pay for? So for me, that's just left there hanging. That's for the reader to decide. Realistically, Sebastian being the jerk he is, it's probably to do with the cargo and the fact he's been outdone by this little slimy alien. But you can always think that Sebastian's a good guy and he's doing it because he wants some revenge for Narina. And Brox points out that they're not there for the chip, and that's not important to them anymore. Which again, we find out is a lie, but Brox firmly believed that when he told Sebastian that, and we realise that later on, is that Brox is a, despite lying here, he's a little bit of a man of his word. He does make a promise with Sebastian later on about the chip and that they're not interested in it, which obviously, like I said, his bosses changed their mind. So Sebastian mentions Narina to Brox, and there was you don't know if Brox knows who Narina is. We find out later on that he does, and that's why he's there, but I wanted to make it seem, just in this scene, that Narina was a nobody to Brox. There's a little bit of a hint, I think, in the dialogue that he's lying when he says he doesn't know who she is. But I think he's believable to Sebastian, I think. That's what's key here, is that Sebastian does believe that she, because Sebastian's never considered that Narina could be this big player in the Orion Syndicate. That's never occurred to him. He doesn't have a clue. So I think he believes that Brox, who, as far as he's concerned, is a big player. I think he can believe that, that Brox doesn't know who she is. So we move on, and we find out very quickly that with a person called Deso Corral, we discover that Brox has been lying. He's set up Sebastian. He's making him believe a lie, but we don't know what for. We just know that the plan is moving along successfully and that Knight believes everything. But what is the plan? And we're not going to find out for a good 10 pages or so. As I mentioned here to Emre, I think Emre, he did get mentioned by name in the first episode. I can't remember if that got into the latest version of the first episode that got released back in November. But I kept the name the same anyway as what it was when we launched back in 2006. Emre was named after one of my favourite just Newcastle United footballers at the time, a Turkish footballer, Emre. He's no longer with the club. Left us just before our relegation. I think it was just before our relegation. I hope he wasn't one of the ones who abandoned us after relegation, because I'd then have to hate him. And I'd be annoyed that I honoured him in one of my scripts. But yeah, he was named after him. I thought it was a It's a foreign name, so it sounds alien. And Emre, as we'll soon discover if we haven't already realised it from episode one, is the leader of the Orion Syndicate. He's a bad guy. We haven't met him yet, but we've heard about him. So that's the end of Act 2. I think we've got a mystery now. We've got peril with Narina. We've had explosions and all that. What else is going to happen? Sebastian is on a bridge, and Reem thinks that Sebastian's made a mistake trusting Brox. He shouldn't be doing it. Reem reckons it's an error just to work with them. But Sebastian mentions here again is that Truthan's responsible for murdering Narina. And again, we don't know if that's really his reason for wanting to go after them. I mean, he's mentioned that he wants Truthan dead. Now, I think that's quite a strong thing. Sebastian was a Starfleet officer. They don't really believe in killing people. I think it shows that either Sebastian wasn't a good fit for Starfleet in that regard either, or his attitude has changed a lot since leaving Starfleet, and he's a bit more vicious now than he was. And as Alan says, I thought that Starfleet officers never sought revenge. And Sebastian just holds out his hands and says, well, do you see a uniform? I think I was trying to make a point with Sebastian's intentions there. He was going all bad boy on us. Here we are, we're on the kicker and cell, and we're about to get into the big action scene now. There's a large crowd around the cell now, and you're standing, you know, and there's loud noises, and Narina's trying to cover her ears not to hear it. There's all these alien animals drooling. And then we've got one eager Kikaran, opens up the cell. And only he goes in, everyone else stands back. Maybe they're just wondering, they want to see what it's going to be like. But he goes in and he moves towards, you know, the insinuation here is very clear. He's going to go in there to have a sexual encounter with her. And I think that's kind of what all these, the first half of this episode was building up towards, is that there was the risk of this happening to Narina. And now, you know, we're going to see it. Someone's going in. Hence why he's called Eager Kikaran. He couldn't contain himself, the rest of them. Quite what Druthan would do if he found out that one of his guards had got there before him is something we never find out and find an answer to. But so we see here the crowd love it and start making more noise when Narina sort of crawls away. And then again, there's an insinuation that we may see something that's a bit horrific and uncomfortable. Not that we've ever really seen anything to that effect on Night's Haven before, but we do like to go into dark territory sometimes. But just when we think, oh no, that's it for Narina, the ship shakes violently and Kikaran are thrown off their feet. Everyone rushes out. There's klaxons wailing and they're under attack, basically. The eager Kikaran, though, is tempted, and in typical man fashion, you know, he's thinking, do I get my rocks off or do I go help? What should I do? We might get blown up. But I really, really can't control these urges. And that's what he's thinking. Eventually he does control them. He goes to go out of the cell. Narina's safe. The worst isn't going to happen. But then just as he turns to lock to bring the force field up again, a bare green foot comes out of nowhere, hits him in the bottom of his jaw, crushes it into his upper jaw, and we hear his neck snap. And we get into space now, and the Kikaran ship is under all sorts of fire. The shield's glowing red, and we're getting a bit of a comeuppance for what they did at the start of the episode of Haven. And we see the two Orion ships attacking it, but then Haven is there as well, Phaser Banks letting rip. And Sebastian very quickly realises that the shields are down, and Trek rule is, I don't know if I've really established it in Night's Haven, but you can't beam somewhere if the shields are up. The shields have to be down for you to be able to beam into a ship or something. So now Narina's got a blood-soaked blade in her hand, presuming that that's, even though the Kikaran's neck snapped, we can assume that she used his blade to actually kill him because it's covered in blood. So that is the insinuation of how our eager Kikaran died. She's also wearing his shirt, so she's not completely bare naked now. She's walking along the corridor, the ship's shaking, and there's all sorts of danger. Finally, the ship's just, they capture an attractor beam, and there's a bit of silence in space. Well, there's always silence in space, but you know, there's no battle going on. Onto the Kikaran ship in a different corridor. Yeah, I'm on page 27, and suddenly Sebastian's like, which way? and Reem hasn't got an idea, any clue, and then Sebastian's like, well, great, one day we will beam onto an enemy ship with a plan. And that's the kind of thing that I love about Night's Haven, that sense of humour, because they do get into these positions and they don't have a plan a lot of the time, and it happened in the last episode, they got caught out. They were a bit recklessly running around Hydra's ship, shooting people and all that. So he's come onto this ship and assuming we're going to get the same thing again. But they get surrounded by Orions who beam over, and there's a little bit of a confrontation, but Brox lowers his weapon. You know, he's still going along with it. He's studying Sebastian. Is Sebastian really there for Drew than Sebastian is, but Brox, I think, is unsure. Does he know that Noreen is on the ship? We know that Sebastian doesn't, but Brox lets him lead the way anyway, sort of wondering what's going on. Then in this third corridor, we get another action sequence. Some kick-around soldiers come over a door, and Sebastian ducks, and the shot just hits his Orion in the face behind him. It was meant to be a sort of a funny moment, but it's always funny until suddenly someone's face burns away, which is what happens in this case. Eventually, Sebastian and Ree manage to shoot the two bad guys who squeal and explode. I don't know. I left it in there on this rewrite because I just thought, oh, so what a funny way for these aliens to die. Just when they get shot, they explode. And squeal as well. I thought it was humorous and a bit very alien. Suddenly, Nerina shows up and Sebastian can't believe what he's seeing. Sebastian realizes, looking at Nerina, that something's happened to her. I think he's worrying. I mean, he does mention later on that she may have been sexually violated. I think it's safe to say the script as it stands and my intention when writing it was that nothing of that sort did happen to her, even though we never get a definite answer either way. But yeah, I think it's safe. I would say as the writer, if you're wondering as a reader, Nerina, nothing like that happened to Nerina, but there was a near miss, which we saw earlier in the script. And Sebastian said, forget what I said, Drew, then it's all yours. And so whatever Sebastian's intentions were for going to the ship, whether it was for revenge for Nerina or revenge for Drew not thinking him, he's got Nerina back now, and suddenly good guy Sebastian's kicked in. He's got what he wants. He's happy to go back, so he beams back. So we get in the transporter room, and everyone's surprised Nerina's there. Again, Sebastian makes a comment about getting her to her own clothes, get her to sick bay, do a full body scan. So we get surrounded. Four green transporter beams appear. Now, I've set rules in Nightshaven that only three people can beam onto the transporter pad in any one go because of the size, because it's meant to be small. That's why people only ever leave Haven in threes. In this instance, so I then beam into the room, not onto the pad, so to speak, which you haven't normally seen on Nightshaven. Just to get around the whole fact there was four of them. And suddenly Sebastian realizes something's up, and it turns out Brox is there for her. We find out then that Brox murdered Narina's father. Now, this is what I was talking about earlier with the old webisodes, which may get re-released at some point. We saw this event happen. We saw Brox killing Narina's father. Now, we don't know it's Narina's father, though, until this episode. I mean, the scripts are very vague still, is that you didn't realise Narina's connection to the man who got killed in that webisode. So the idea is you see it, you find out here, and then the people who had read that knew, suddenly saw the link between the two scripts. So we had seen Narina's father die before we ever met Nerina as a reader. But obviously, I didn't release those this time because I didn't think they were very important to the show as it stands right now, not to how I want to present it. But yeah, that was an interesting. It was called Power Play. We got to see Emery, not see him, but we saw people, his plan come into place where he took over the syndicate. So Brox makes a threat, and he makes it quite clear that if Sebastian doesn't hand her over peacefully, he will go after the chip, and suddenly it's going to be, the information. So suddenly Sebastian's going to be in danger, maybe Amelia's going to be in danger, not just Nerina. So Sebastian wants to, he's considering this, he wants to chat to her. Now we get a scene, and a lot of people, readers, in pilot season and in our proper release then, were pointing out, this whole scene with Nerina sleeping with Sebastian, it came out of nowhere. Why is Sebastian sleeping with this woman when his mum's in danger, or his crewmates are in danger, he's in danger, why is he doing it? We find out now why, as we discover she used pheromones, which Orions do have, has been established in previous Star Trek, in a sense, almost releasing a scent that makes the man want her, and that's what she did with Sebastian. He's a little bit hurt. He realises almost when he thinks about it, he says himself that he should have known that's what happened, because that's what they get told about it when they were in Starfleet Academy, which essentially is college. So we finally get an explanation for that scene. So that scene that people were saying came out of nowhere and all that, the reason it stayed in there even after pilot season was because it was all part of this scene. It was very crucial in that Nerina forcing Sebastian, not forcing him, but it wasn't against his will to sleep with her. She tricked him into it and to get an emotional attachment there, so he may care about her a bit more to help her escape this place. That is what really turns Sebastian against her then. He claims it's because she's technically, her father was a criminal, meaning that she's technically a criminal because she would have been a witness to a lot of these acts. But, it's what really
freaks him out is the fact that she admits to using these pheromones on him. So that's really what freaks him out. So that's why that scene was in the first episode of Night's Haven. And it builds towards this. This season is littered, even the first, what are we, episode 8 now? The 7 episodes before this are littered with references and remarks to stuff coming in later episodes and even in later seasons. I don't think anyone ever thought that that sex, random sex scene in episode 1 would lead to what this episode eventually leads to. Because if it hadn't been for that scene, Sebastian may not have turned Narina over, and Narina may not have met her ultimate fate that she does in this episode. So basically, he goes a bit mad with her, he gets a bit violent with her. We've never seen Sebastian like this, particularly with a woman. I did want him to look like a bit of a jerk and very selfish, even though he's trying to claim that she's been selfish. You know, he's pushing her around a bit. And considering what we've seen her go through, it's quite horrible, and she's upset. I think we can see she's genuinely feels at home on Haven, and she really is upset that Sebastian's feeling this way towards her, and she really did hate Emery, and we get hints to, you know, the things he was doing to her, which ties into some sexual assault comments that got made in the laboratory on the Kikaron ship. So, you know, he goes in and just says, "She's all yours," and I think that's a really scummy thing to say, as if she's filth. He doesn't want her anymore, just get rid of her, doesn't want her around, and he pretty much says that as well. He does say, "I don't care about any of that, just get her off my ship." And Brox, I think, genuinely, very genuinely, says that, you know, he will tell Emery of Sebastian's goodwill, kind gesture, and hopefully that'll make Sebastian look good in future. But so we're left with the last time that Narina will ever speak to Sebastian. She's screaming his name. That's the last time there's a dialogue exchange between them in this episode. So that's the end of Act 3, and I think we've seen each act has been almost a different story completely, and that was a pretty chilling end to the act. And we're going into the final 17 pages then, 16 pages, and we don't, where's the story going to go from this point? There's an act left, so we obviously must assume that, you know, as a reader, that Sebastian obviously must go back for Narina. But we don't get to that right away. At first, Robin can't believe what she's witnessed. She can't believe that Sebastian's given up Narina. Alan didn't see any of it, so he's a bit like business as usual when Robin gets onto the bridge at the start of Act 4, but he realises something's wrong. Then we go to Sebastian's cabin, where he's calling her a bitch. He's kicking stuff and all that. And again, I think the insinuation's there. I hope this came across to the reader. He is more pissed off that she tricked him into sleeping with her and used him as a sexual object, in a sense, herself, to get what she wanted. And I think he feels a little bit, you know, Sebastian's very proud. He thinks of him as a ladies' man. He doesn't like the idea he got duped into making a connection with this girl to protect her. Sebastian has a conversation with Lenny, who, you know, what is Lenny? Sebastian keeps seeing him, chatting to him. He has ever since the first episode. But what is Lenny? Is he real? Is he in Sebastian's head? Who knows? It's not something readers have really questioned yet so far, so it seems to be flying. Well, it seems to be something that's not getting noticed too much. But we get a scene here where Lenny, you know, he's furious. And we get a confrontation between them. And even Lenny can see through the bullshit is that Sebastian has turned her over as a selfish act, not because she was a danger to the ship. And as Lenny points out, you know, your crew is your family and you never give up on one of your family. Then Sebastian says, well, that's a bit rich coming from you. And it goes back again to Sebastian. Despite all the evidence we've seen that Lenny was a good father, you know, Sebastian is adamant that Lenny wasn't. And he makes a little dig there that Lenny may have given up on him. So like, we've got the warp speed, the capital letters on warp and speed, just to make it, I just wanted to admit, it's not, again, it's trying to make it something which new readers might understand. You know, warp speed is fast, like, you know, so I try to avoid just saying moving at warp or travelling at warp. It'll always be warp speed. It's just one of those little touches we put in, which I think personally would make it a bit more accessible to non-Trekkie readers, if we have many right now. And so we get a scene on Brox's personal quarters. He's speaking to Deso Kral. Then we find out that Emery has actually switched to Narina's sisters, who are younger than Narina now. And that gets mentioned in the script, and Deso Kral doesn't seem to care. But the insinuation is that they may be significantly younger. Again, fitting with this weird alien culture that we're finding out about in this script, where, you know, these teenagers or even younger, you know, are being having sex, if they're being forced into it or whatnot. I think it's really seedy. It's not a side of Star Trek we see very often. It's not something we see on on Knight's Haven very often. So we find out Emery's changed his mind about Knight and he decides to interrogate him again. So we think Emery is a really fickle leader. Like a king almost, changes his mind all the time because he can. And Brox is surprised. And Desacrale again is saying, do not question his decisions. And Brox is very careful. He says he's not questioning him, he's just merely curious. And so Brox agrees that he will send a ship back for... So we get into a big action scene. It all ends in it with Haven's shuttle coming back into play, which we haven't seen for a little while. Sebastian's flying it. We haven't really seen Sebastian flying very often. We always forget that he's a pilot, and that's what he used to do before he went back to Haven. But we got a glimpse of it here, and Ream with him firing weapons. So I think it was like almost like a bit of a cowboyish kind of scene. So Haven actually wins one of its first firefights. We don't often have Haven in firefights because they don't win. Their ship's too old to win. They're a cargo ship, and so we don't often do these scenes. But in this instance, something actually goes right for him. And we get a scene now between Sebastian and Brox where they're chatting, and Sebastian's been a bit tougher with him, much like they were in the mess hall, really. And Sebastian's a bit cocky, a little worrying. He probably risks his life with his mouth a lot more than he needs to, but insinuates that he's contacted Starfleet. I made a reference. He references the USS Malbec and Captain Jadot, the Malbec and the Jadot appeared in episode 2, The Storm, if you remember, when Sebastian and Haven were going to the Grildera colony to raid it. They got stopped by a Starfleet ship, and that was the ship. It was the Malbec and the Jadot. The Malbec was named after the wine, and Captain Jadot was named after the French word, which would make no sense as a name, but it's quite cool as a alien sounding name. So that's where all that came from. Sebastian says, "Well, you can't trust me. Maybe I won't stop Starfleet from coming after you, but you've got to just hope that I don't." Brox prepares her for transport, and I think when he says, "Where do you want her?" Sebastian saying, "Right there will be fine, thank you." Just pointing in front of him. I think as a reader, I don't know. I think as a reader, you realise that something not good is about to happen. Although there is only 3 pages left of the episode, so you're thinking, happy ending. But I would think reading it that something's up. This isn't going to be quite as good. Sebastian, he says, "I think we just won for once." And I think that is a line of doom. And even Robin smiling, they've just beaten the bad guys for once. And they've come up tough and on top. And then Narina starts to appear and Sebastian stands up and he's about to say, "Narina, I'm..." And you assume, and he's about to say, "I'm sorry." But he stops. Narina's eyes are wide open and her lips are stretched apart. And realisation hits Sebastian. And it's as we move on then, and Robin screams in horror. Sebastian looks down at Narina's from her face, which isn't moving, to her naked body because she's been stripped again. It's covered in bloody cuts and whip marks. And then he sees a huge hole through the middle of her chest with smoke still coming from it, telling us that the wound is only seconds old. And at that moment, her body drops to the floor and she's dead. And Knight's Haven has killed off its first regular. That is a defining moment of the show. I think the fact the smoke was still coming from it, the insinuation was that Brox was conceding by letting them have Narina back, but that he had a shot just as she was transported. And I think that's also in her face, her eyes being wide, having her wide eyes and her mouth stretched open, the insinuation that she was just reacting to having been shot, because it was obviously unexpected for her. And then she died. And it was like a real sort of, for me, it was a fuck you moment from Brox to Sebastian, and that Sebastian was wrong. They hadn't won for once. If anything, him doing what he did might have caused a death for Narina that she might not necessarily have had if he hadn't gone after her and been so cocky with Brox. Sound drowns out. I mean, visually in my head, I saw this scene from the moment I came up with Narina's character. So it went through a few changes in this version. I did the way the her body was described was changed a little bit. The death was always the same, the hole through the middle of the chest with the smoke coming from it. But I just changed it for the ease of reading to fit it more with the style of our scripts now. It was changed slightly, but he rushes out of the room and we go into the washroom, which we haven't seen for a couple of episodes, essentially the bathroom. He throws up. Now, we haven't really ever seen Sebastian exposed like this, but he's throwing up from seeing her dead and just all the emotional torture of it all. And he goes straight for the nearest sink outside, turns the water on, you know, he's washing his face. The idea was here is that he's starting to freak out a little bit. And then he gets angry, you know, I really wanted to show Sebastian this. We saw it in his cabin earlier on, where he's just throwing stuff around his cabin, but in this instance, you know, he just wrecks the room, you know, he kicks stuff, he smashes the glass, he can't look at his reflection. And then finally, and you know, he pulls his shoe off, and we find out that he's been hiding the chip in his shoe now rather than his hand. And why is he looking at it? Because the chip's been mentioned in this episode, but it's not been a key part of it. It's been, it wasn't the driving force of the episode like it was in the previous episode. But it's obviously, it was always mentioned, the reason the Orions ever took an interest in Haven in the first place was because of this chip. So he's looking at it, and Amelia comes in. And I think we always forget that Amelia's not in a lot of the bridge scenes, because that's not what she does. She's not a bridge person. And so she finds out now for the first time that Narina's dead. She's devastated, and as the description tells us, Sebastian turns away from her, and he's looking at the chip, and suddenly he's switched. He's gone from being an emotional wreck to and stunned to, you know, and he tells her he's had enough, you know, he's going to do what his dad never did, and he's going to find out what's on the chip. And I think that line is setting us up for the rest of the season, and then we're on Sebastian, you know, determination in his eyes, and he says, "God have mercy on anyone who gets in my way." And then we black out, and that's the end of the episode. So we've set up, you know, where the storyline is heading in the rest of the series. I think that's a nice place to hang it. Originally, his line, it was a little different. His final line was, "I'm sick of being a pawn. It's my turn to make a move." And reading it back, I didn't like it so much, so I changed the line. We killed off Narina, a character that, you know, we hadn't got to know too well throughout the whole show, but I think the death is significant. I think it's going to, I mean, at this point, I haven't read. The script has just gone out 2 hours ago, so I haven't seen any readers' responses to it. I don't think the death came too soon. The show is very much Sebastian's our lead character. The focus is on him. I think anyone that dies around him, you know, it's not too soon. It's all to service Sebastian's plot. I think we found out enough about Narina's life in this episode. I think we got answers about her finally. Maybe we didn't get all the answers we wanted, all the resolution we wanted, but we killed her off. And the reason for killing her off, as we'll see going forward, is that there needs to be repercussions for Sebastian. We saw it in the second episode when Robbie went blind, but that got fixed in episode 3. In this instance, this isn't going to get fixed. It's going to be interesting to see where that takes us, and it really set us up. The last episode did it, episode 7. This one does it more. We now know where we're going for the rest of this season. The stakes have been raised. The shit's starting to hit the fan, and there's some big episodes now coming up. They're all very intertwined into each other. So yeah, that was episode 8. Now, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. Maybe some stuff has come out of it, or you just had an audio description of the episode, which is what I think this has turned into. But I'm looking forward to knowing what people think of the episode and having a chat about it with the readers and reviewers. I am hoping that you're all enjoying Night's Haven. I hope you enjoy where the season goes from here, and most of all, I hope you enjoy what was a very key episode in the history of this show, which I think we'll still be looked back on when we're on season 4 or 5. So, and big shout out to looking through the credits page to Tony Black, who wasn't on the staff when this episode got written, but has given invaluable feedback on it since joining the show, and then to John, who's been there from the beginning, Phil, who's doing some splendid work for us for our second season, but wasn't around for our first season when it originally aired. Adam, who isn't on board now, he pops in from time to time, but he was a key writer in the first season and in the formation of the Narina character and the rest of the show. And then to Phoebe Davis, our editor, who hasn't edited these versions of the scripts but did edit the originals, and she will edit for season 2. So yeah, thank you for listening. I'll try and do more of these, and I'll try to get more people involved so it's not just me going on and losing track of what I'm saying.